So this week we begin the fifth and final Sefer in the Torah, Sefer Dvarim, which ostensibly is Moshe's final speech to the Jewish people. And what I want to do is to look this week at Moshe's recounting of the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, which we saw not that long ago, just a few weeks ago, in Sefer Bamidbar and Parsha Shlach. Here, Moshe, as he gives, it begins his final speech. Pretty quickly, he gets to Chet HaMeraglim, which makes a lot of sense if you think about it, because Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, is why they are there at that juncture. Moshe is giving this speech in the 40th year in the desert. They should have been in Israel 38 years earlier, but the sin of the spies caused everything to unravel, and of course, the punishment that the Jews would have to wander in the desert for the next 38 years, for a total of 40 years, until all the people of that generation that had left Egypt had died out. So it makes sense that he would immediately invoke Chet HaMeraglim. But what I want to do is to just look at the story as he tells it. And I think you'll notice several things are going to jump out at you that will be somewhat questionable. Seems to be a little bit of a revisionist history. Moshe is going to say some things that don't seem to jive in terms of how the Torah presented the story back in Sefer Bamidbar. And so I'm going to try to give a suggestion. First, let's go through and see some of the differences, and then I'm going to offer a suggestion how to understand why there are those differences. So the Torah tells us, and I'm in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chaf. V'omar aleichem basem ahar mori asher Hashem Elokeinu nosim lanu. So Moshe just described that the Jews had been in Chorev. Chorev is Har Sinai. There they had been told in Pasuk Yedches Vatzaveslam Ba'Islahi is called Vrim Asher Tasun. I commanded you, told you everything that you must do, and then we traveled from Chorev. And we traveled, traversed this midbar, this desert, this great and mighty desert. And we came to the Har HaMori, the mount of the Emori. The Emori, we saw last week, the Emori were those, where the people lived on the east bank of the Jordan River, Sichon, the Melech Emori. And we came to Kadesh Barnea. And we were on the verge of entering Eretz Yisrael, right? We left Egypt a year earlier. We got the Torah. Moshe, interestingly, maybe for another time, does not talk about Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. Doesn't talk about the construction of the Mishkan. But they've gotten the Torah, and they're now ready to go to enter into the land of Israel. V'omar aleichem basem ad har mori asher Hashem Elokeinu nosim lanu. We've now reached the Har Mori. We've now reached the place that God is going to give us. Right, we're about to enter into the land of Israel. Re'ei nasa Hashem Elokecha lefanecha es aretz. Behold, God has given before you the land. Alei, go up. Reish kasher diber Hashem Elokei avosech alach al tira v'al techas. Right, let us go. Right, go up, possess of the land that God has given to us. No one should be afraid. No one should lose resolve. You should be confident. We've reached our destiny. Everything that we've dreamed for and yearned for over the past year, everything you probably thought of when you were slaves in Egypt, yearning for freedom, yearning to return to the land of your forefathers, it's now at hand. Great. The next thing should be that, okay, then we went to Israel. What's the next pasuk? Chaf Beis. Vatikrivun Eli Kuchen, you then all came to me, right? You came to me, you the Jewish people, all of you, Vatamru Nishachar Nashim Fanina, Vayakbulan Asaretz. Let us send spies, right? Interesting, a different word is used here as opposed to in Shlach, not Latur, but rather Vayakbulu, again, which is also loosely translated as a spy, but it could be a significant difference. And why do we want to send spies? So here's very interesting. The reason why we want to send spies, we want to know which way we should go up and which cities we should approach. Now, if you ask me, this sounds like this is a reconnaissance mission. This is, we're going to have to conquer the land. It's going to be a military excursion. It's going to take a lot of effort and thought. What's the best way to go? What's the best way to enter? What's the safest way? The way that makes most sense? And which city should we confront first? Again, that makes a lot of sense. And again, if you think to a Yoshua, when he sends the spies to Jericho, seemingly it's like a similar reason. And here we're told, Moshe now interprets how he understands this request. It was good in my eyes. Yashikach makes a lot of sense. No problem. And that does make sense, right? It makes sense. You're going to, we got to figure out how to confront the enemies that are there. Got 12 people, one person for each tribe. Now, right away, there's some differences here, right? Right, because in Parsha Shlach, the way it's presented, it sounds like it's Hashem's instructing it, right? Hashem, here it's presented, the people came to make their request. Moshe agrees to it right away. And furthermore, the only point of this excursion, the point of the spies, seems to be for military purposes. When Moshe gives the instructions back in Parsha Shlach, it's much more expansive. We wonder about the fruit and what the land is like, and the people that are there, and the cities. We get a lot more details. Here, it seems to be very much exclusive, very focused on some sort of military operation. And the people make the request. Moshe says, sounds great. Moshe himself chooses, who the spies will be. And then we're told what happens. Vayifnu vayelu ahara, vayavo anachla shko, vayiraglu osa. Now, interestingly, the word changes here. I told you originally it was vayachbru, now it's vayiraglu. And if you remember from Parsha Shlach, I quoted the Netziv says vayiraglu is when you're very focused on your mission. Latur is more like a general idea, but Yiraglu is we know exactly what we're going to do. It's not just to give a general tour, a general to look around, but we're looking for specific things. So okay, Vayichu biyadam mipri haaretz, and now they take some fruit of the earth, right? Again, Moshe never told him to do that, according to this. Asher Hashem Elokeinu nosin lano. And then it continues. I'm sorry. Vayichu biyadam mipri haaretz v'yaridu eleinu v'yashivu osa davar v'yomru. So what happens? The people, the spies go. They travel around. They bring back the fruit. And they say, Tovaretz, the land is good. Asher Hashem Elokeinu nosin lano. It's a good land. Look at it, right? Here's the fruit. But then they say the following, Pasuk Chavav, V'lo avisam la'alos. But Moshe now says that you didn't want to go up. Right? You, the people, though, refused to go up. V'tamru es bi Hashem. You rebelled against Hashem, your God. V'tiragnu v'aleichem v'tamru. And now Moshe says, what did you say? What did the people say? The people, you... But he says, Vatiragna. Rashi says it's Lashon Hara. You spoke evil about the lands, and you're in your tents, and you're talking to one another. The Sinas Hashem Osanu, that you said, you began to put words in God's mouth. And why does Hashem, why is he bringing us into this land? Because he hates us. Pretty strong words. Because Hashem, Sinas Hashem Osanu, you know why he took us out of Egypt? Not because he cared about us, not because we were crying and we were begging for our freedom and salvation. No, God took us out because he hated us. That's why he took us out of Egypt. To give us into the hands of the Mori to be destroyed. Now, this pasuk sounds very familiar to Shlach. Now they give the reasons why they're all scared and afraid. They said our hearts are melted. There's such a strong and mighty people are there. these great, large, fortified cities. The Anak are there. Again, the Anak, somehow they must have known who these people were, people that they're very afraid of. So, again, this is so far a recap. The battle tent to Israel. Moshe says, don't be afraid. Everything's going to be great. The people say to him, we want to sort of search out the land. Seems to be solely for reconnaissance mission. Moshe sounds great, wonderful. Moshe finds 12 leaders, 12 heads of each tribe to go on the mission. They come back. They look for fruit. They bring back the fruit. They say the land is a good land. But then Moshe says, but then you don't want to go up. And you rebelled against God, and you said God's only taking us there because he hates us, because we're all going to die there, because there are these giants there, and there's these strong, fortified cities that are there, the people are mighty and strong. And then Moshe says the following, V'omarechem, and I said to you, lo tarzum, lo tirun mehem. What did I say to you? No, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Hashem is going to go before you. He will fight the battles for you. Nothing to worry about. Whatever he did for you in Egypt, he'll do before your eyes here as well. And who do you think is taking care of you until now? Who took care of you, says Moshe, the past 12 months in the desert? Right? It wasn't a natural living. You're going to die in the desert. God took care of you. It's almost to survive, if not for a miraculous manner, which God provided for you. But, says Moshe, Devarza, Inchem Maminim Bashem Okecha. But Moshe then says, but now you don't believe God? After all that he did for you? At night, God had the fire, and during the day, he had the clouds. He's continuously watched over you and protected you. What's going on? Now, what's the obviously question here? Is that back in Parsha Shlach, this is not at all what happens. Hey, Moshe. Did Moshe say all these words in Parsha Shlach? The answer is no. Right? Who did it? It was Kalev who did the talking, right? Kalev was the one who tried to convince the people that to look at it from a different perspective, to not to think that they would be unable to conquer the land. And Moshe was silent, and here Moshe says, "No, I said all these things," and the punishment that then concludes, the punishment's the same. Vayishma Hashem is called Divrechem, Vayiksof Vayishva Lemor. Right, we know the rest of the story, and no one's going to enter the land, none of the men. Zulasi Kaleb ben Yefuna, except for Kaleb ben Yefuna, right, he's going to see it. And Yeshua ben Nun, right, Hu Yavo Shama, right, he will go, but not you. And only your children. So the question is, what's going on here? And Bible scholars for years and centuries have used this as fodder for challenging the Torah, having maybe multiple authors and different perspectives, because this recounting, Moshe's recounting, it's so again the story is basically the same, but there's so many details that have been changed. Who made the request? What was Moshe's attitude towards it? Who was the one who tried to calm the people down? So I just want to suggest, over the last month or so, there's a new book that came out several months ago, and there's been a lot of talk about it in different Jewish circles. I believe that it's a professor at Bar Ilan. I think it's Joshua Berman is his name. He wrote a book called Ani Mamim. And he has a very interesting perspective in the way of looking at the Torah, a very strong defense of the Torah against biblical criticism. And one of the arguments that he makes in this book, again, whether this is accurate or not, I have no idea. This is just his theory, but I just want to use a theory to maybe then understand the story, is that he suggests that the whole notion of history and of accuracy and facts, he says, is a modern discipline. It's something new to the university. It wasn't something that was studied until recent times. Recent times mean maybe the last century, two or three. But before that, people didn't really study history. In fact, if I remember correctly, the original universities, what was studied originally was medicine, I believe. Right, you studied medicine. You studied, I think, philosophy. And the other one was theology, right? History was not a discipline. It's a more recent discipline. And the notion of facts and evidence and archaeology, he said for thousands of years, it was not how people looked at the past. It just wasn't the way that people understood things. And, questions of accuracy and of exact details were just not important and were not studied. And furthermore, he says, if you look at a lot of a Near Eastern literature, certainly around the time of from the Torah, from let's say 3,000-4,000 years ago, and even more recent, things intentionally were often changed. And no one had a problem with that in terms of, and things were embellished. Often we read Josephus, and Josephus talks about to observe Tisha B'Av. And Josephus talks about the period during Bayesheni and the destruction that took place during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash and what life was like in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim leading up to the destruction. Sometimes he'll talk about the millions of people who were in Israel to celebrate Pesach. There probably weren't millions of people, but he uses those numbers, and the Gemara does this all the time. The Gemara will talk about even Korban Pesach about like 10 million livers that they collected of the Korban Pesach. It was intentionally embellished. It was these terms were used just to describe magnitude and significance, but not necessarily to be taken literally, and that weren't necessarily presumed to be taken literally by those who were reading it. And what this Professor Berman shows from a bunch of other Near Eastern documents is often you have the same story told multiple times and it'll be told differently each time. And he said the reason why it's often told differently is because people weren't interested in the history of it. They're interested in the message of it. What was the lesson? And what may have been a relevant message when it was first shared 10 years earlier, maybe the person who's telling the story 10 years later wants to give a different message. And no one cared that the facts were changed because that wasn't important. What was important was not the facts. What was important was the takeaway. What was being conveyed? In fact, if I remember correctly, he uses one term over and over again. He says the Torah is a book not of history, but of exhortation. It's a book of lessons. And the story, and this he spends a lot of time, I believe, in his book. It's a worthwhile read if you want to get the book called Ani Mamim again. He spends a lot of time demonstrating, and he's a fascinating, very long chapter on Yetzias Mitzrayim, where he gives a lot of evidence to demonstrate from archaeology and other things that we have that there were Jews in Egypt, the Jews were enslaved in Egypt, but all the specific details are not necessarily intentionally supposed to be accurate. And that often, again, things will change when something is being described, not intentionally to mislead anyone, because no one would expect it to be 100% accurate. Rather, to take a story that you knew and to use the story as a springboard to teaching other lessons. So that's his theory. Again, whether he's right or not, I have no idea. It's not my area of expertise. I think it's an interesting, a fascinating approach, theory. But if he's correct that the story that Moshe tells is not that we should not be wasting our time trying to make it work with the previous story. You know, some of us should do that. Some of us should try to, when Moshe said this, he really meant that, and try to make the stories, really say the same thing. This professor from Bar-Ilan says, no, there's no need to do that. There's no need to try to make them work together. When it says in Shlach that Hashem told us to send the spies, okay, that's one thing. When it says in Moshe, it was the people's idea to send the spies, they're not supposed to fit together. The only thing that's supposed to fit together is that spies were sent and it was a failure. That's the facts. Spies were sent, it was a failure. And now the question is, as Moshe is about to leave the people, what's his message to them? Right? What's his agenda? Right? And I left that one more point. One more thing that Moshe says in the story that totally throws everyone off is that when describing the punishment that befell the Jewish people as a result of this sin, so Moshe says the following. Let me get the exact words. Moshe says that not only were the people punished, they have to spend 40 years in the desert, but also gam bi sanaf Hashem. Also, because of you, Hashem became angry at me. Biglachem limor, because of you. And he said, gam ata lo savosham. You also won't enter Israel. Now, 1 second. Even more recently than Shlach, we read Chukas. And we knew nothing about the fact that Moshe was not going to enter Israel only until Moshe hit the rock. And when? In the 40th year. And Moshe is now here saying, no, 4 years earlier when the spies, it was already decided I wasn't going to enter Israel. Well, that's not what it said back in Sefer Bamidbar. So again, I want to use this Professor Berman to give a suggestion that I think what Moshe is doing here, and again, if he's correct, his agenda is that he's trying to send a specific message to the Jewish people. And he's telling them the following. He says, you're now about to enter the land of Israel. And is sending spies a bad idea? The answer is no, not at all. Right? There's nothing wrong. It actually makes perfect sense to send spies. If your purpose in sending spies is to scout the land, to know how to, how you're going to attack, or what crossing you're going to make, which cities should be the first ones that you should approach. That makes perfect sense. And that's a good thing. Right? I agree that's a wonderful thing. And the leader should be the one to identify who the right spies are for that. And guess what? Yeshua is listening to this final speech as well. And Yeshua takes the advice that Moshe gives. That's why Yeshua himself chooses spies when they're about to approach Jericho. Right? So that's Moshe is using this incident to tell you that spies is not inherently a bad thing. It's actually something that makes a lot of sense. It's doing your hishtalos, putting in your effort. And there's absolutely nothing wrong about doing that. So that's point number one. Number two is that, what was the problem here? The problem with this particular mission is that the people didn't do what they were supposed to do, right? They decided to expand their mission. They decided to start giving their interpretations, right? They forgot about Hashem, right? You do your part and Hashem, he'll lead you. Hashem will watch over you. When they started giving their interpretations, when they started going beyond, what they were told, beyond their instructions, when they forgot about the fact that Hashem had taken care of them all along, and now I looked at it from a purely practical, a pragmatic perspective, which they were not incorrect. On paper, it did not make sense that they'd be successful. Well, that's where you're going to fail, because Moshe is telling the people. The mistake is going to be repeated again. If you don't place your trust in Hashem this time around, it's going to be the same results. You're going to have the same problem as your parents had 40 years earlier. You need to recognize that it's Hashem who took you out of Egypt, Hashem who for all this time protected you in the desert, and it's Hashem who will also guarantee that you'll be successful if you place your trust in him. And I think perhaps this is why Moshe uses his own words and not Kalev to make this point. Because it could be, listen, what was the facts? Was Kalev the one to do this, or was it Moshe? So it could be really was Kalev, and that's why Moshe himself tells us that Kalev was going to be rewarded, right? Moshe himself says here that Kalev and Yoshua are going to be rewarded. But at this point, it's not important at that point who said it. It's important for Moshe to be strong as a leader. The people need to hear this from Moshe. The people need to hear Moshe giving them this encouragement and this instruction. And therefore, Moshe uses maybe Kalev's language in his own mouth in order to be very assertive and strong. And again, it's not important who really said at the end of the day. At this point, it's just Moshe just finds it necessary to be very clear to the people. They don't need a Moshe at this moment to be himself not so convinced that this is the right approach, to not be so strong in the message. If Moshe would have said that the Kalev said all these things, people would say, okay, it's Kalev. What about you, Moshe? You're the leader. Right? So Moshe had to, in his own words, emphasize these points. So I think that's why that change is made. And again, it according to Professor Berman, it makes no difference, and the people would not care, the fact that Moshe had changed the stories. Again, it sounds like that was normative. That was to be expected. You're not going to necessarily always say factually, word for word, what had occurred originally. You're going to be sharing a lesson using an idea, a story that people were basically familiar with. Why does Moshe say, because of this incident, that's why I'm not entering the land? That seems to be a complete fabrication. God never said that Moshe wasn't going to enter the land. The one was later with hitting the rock in the 40th year. So I want to suggest, just based on something I've shared also until this point, we were looking through Sefer Bamidbar, and I believe that approach to the Maharal and that to Moshe hitting the rock is that it was already determined, I believe, what Moshe was saying, and I think this is true, at this point that Moshe was not going to enter Israel. By Moshe hitting the rock, as we saw from the Maharal, was this Hashem reinforcing to Moshe why he was not going to enter into Israel. Right, Moshe was not going to enter into Israel because the Jewish people no longer needed him. His role of leadership, of everything being with the staff and supernatural and miracles, that was the desert experience, right? But everything changed after the sin of the spies. The Jewish people were not yet ready to enter into Israel. Hashem was slowly over time going to relate to him in a much more natural manner. And Moshe wasn't needed. He wasn't the right person for the job to enter into Israel. The event that, I guess, somewhat sealed its fate, but again, according to Maharal, was more just Hashem demonstrating to Moshe, was in the 40th year of hitting the rock, when he's told to speak to the rock. But Moshe is correct. It already was with the sin of the spies, and this transformation was going to have to occur over the 40 years, that already at that point, Moshe understands, and he now can reflect back upon this at this point when he gives his final speech, that it already had been determined much earlier, nearly 40 years earlier, that because of this, I was not going to enter into Israel. I was not going to be the leader that was going to be necessary for that new stage in the lives of the Jewish people. Yeah, I think this is an interesting way of looking at this. It doesn't require us to force difficult explanations to try to make these two stories fit with one another. But I think it fits into this larger theme of what is Sefer Devarim all about. All right, we're getting Sefer Devarim this Shabbos. Sefer Devarim is Moshe preparing the people to enter into Israel. Right, at the end of the day, that's what Sefer Devarim is all about. It's his last chance. It's his last opportunity to try to get the people on track, to try to get the people focused. And he's going to include in his speech whatever he feels is necessary, whatever he feels is critical. And he probably has a limited amount of time to talk. Right, he can't go over the entire Torah, nor does he want to. Not all of it is going to be... In the moment, critical for the people to hear. He needs to tell them things to give them encouragement, keep them focused, to remember what their mission is, about their commitment to Hashem. And he uses the story of the spies, the first story he really expands upon, to remind them that the most important thing in all this is your faith in Hashem. Because by yourself, you're right, it's not gonna work. It's gonna be difficult. The same problems that existed 40 years ago are gonna exist now. But if you understand that Hashem is with you, Hashem is gonna watch over you, you do your part, right? You can send in your spies when it makes sense to send in spies, but then you place your trust in Hashem. You don't look at something that it's impossible, that it's not achievable, that's insurmountable, but rather you look at it that, okay, I'll do my part, I'll follow this Torah, and I know then Hashem is with me, because it's what Hashem wants, then you'll be able to achieve anything. Then you'll be able to achieve the your ultimate destiny. And all the promises that God gave to your forefathers will be able to unfold and will play themselves out. Okay, I want to wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. And God willing, next week we'll do Parsha, probably because the Tisha B'Av is on Thursday. Probably the Parsha class, I imagine, Monday or Tuesday night. I will let you know.